Hey, Slingers, welcome back to another week of the Word Slinger podcast. And I'm talking to J. Daniel Sawyer, host of the Everyday Novelist podcast. And he's going to tell you how to get a fertile mental life. So stick around. Hey, how you doing on money? I know it's a touchy subject, but I got something that may help you out. See, I'm using an app called Acorns. And it helps me manage some investing, put some money back, get a little interest. It's kind of nice to watch my money grow. So I want to share that with you. Go to kevintomlinson.com/acorns and you'll get some free money. See you there.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand. Write your book. Redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey, everybody. This is Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. I am here bunkered in my in-law's place. Probably like you, quarantining and the like. So how's it going with that, with everybody? For me, it's strangely similar to what it was before the quarantine. I am, in a new location, but otherwise, work just continues exactly the way it always did. If anything, work has just picked up at more than ever. I've been doing a lot of live streaming and video stuff lately, and a lot of that's for Draft to Digital. We've been doing this daily D2D spotlight where we are talking to industry insiders. Authors, influencers, people with services, people who do marketing, all kinds of things. If you're not checking that out, you definitely should go to Draft. You can go to drafttodigital.com/live, or rather, go to d2dlive.com, and you'll catch up on the latest ones where everything's available there. You can find all of it there, but you can also go to youtube.com/drafttodigital, and that'll take you to our page, and we've got a growing list of these things there, and we're adding them to a playlist so you can go through them all. Tons of these things. I'm not the only one involved in this. Dan Wood and Mark Lefebvre are also hosting some of these, and there's going to be some stuff evolving out of this. We're having a real good time with it. This has been a lot of fun. It's been fun to connect with the community at this level, but also to just share, daily something that I think can sort of uplift the author community right now. Because there's a lot of crazy stuff happening. But frankly, ebooks have just never sold better. That whole thing about the publishing industry saying, the traditional publishing industry saying that ebooks were a fad, that they were not selling, no one's buying, they're terrible quality, all that stuff has just gone out the window in the face of not being able to buy physical books right now. So get out there and check out those videos. There's a lot of great advice in there. I have really enjoyed doing those. It's a little exhausting because it has like quadrupled my workload, but all for the better, It's worth it to end your day slightly exhausted when you know you've done something remarkable, and those are certainly remarkable. On the other on other fronts, I have been doing a weekly show called The Kevin Show. I think I may have mentioned this last week. I'm not sure. My memory is fuzzy right now, but I'm doing this weekly show, and it's not aimed at authors. It's not even really aimed at readers. It's just aimed at human beings. As we, we need a little bit of distraction. I decided I'd start doing a 30-minute show every week called The Kevin Show. It broadcasts on Facebook and YouTube live, so you can tune in. But it's also, recorded and ready for playback. So you can go check out that if you go to youtube.com/KevinTomlinson. That'll take you to my YouTube page. While you're there, just for the grins of it, go ahead and subscribe to that channel and click the little bell to get notified when I release something new. I'm going to be adding more content to that over time, but these weekly shows have been really useful to me, so I'm kind of glad to see them there. So I hope you enjoy that stuff. That show, by the way, I think we kind of talk about it a little in this interview. That show is interesting, and I think it's something that authors may want to think about. Not necessarily the show itself, not necessarily even producing live content like that. But the fact was, I had an idea on one evening, kind of talked it over with my good friend Nick Thacker, and said, you know, I'd like to create this show. I'd like to just for the fun of it. I was exhausted. I just got through March, which was one of my heaviest months for creating content for D2D, because we were doing a relaunch for the site. I was moving and stressed out. I'd gotten some bad health news, and I was stressed out. I had all this stuff stacked against me, and I needed an outlet. I needed to just laugh for half an hour and be distracted from the pandemic and everything else. So I pitched the idea to Nick, and in an hour, on one evening, I created some assets for a show, graphics, an opening video, music, everything, and got Nick booked for the first episode, and then the next day we did it. 30 minutes, no scripts, no plan, we just riffing on each other and having a good time and joking. I got Nick to play the ukulele, so, and it was a good distraction, but it shows to me that we live in this just incredible time where we can just decide, I'm going to create something, and then it is there, immediately available for the world to enjoy. As authors, we do this with our books, right? We have, right now, there has never been a time in history ever where the link between an author's work and the reader was so immediate. You can, and I've done this, and you've heard me talk about this in past episodes. If you haven't heard this story before, it's spread through numerous episodes of this podcast. If you have heard it before, bear with me. There could be new people listening. But, you know, I've done things like, you know, I've been standing in line at Disney World, you know, on a layover between conferences in like a 3-hour line. And took out my phone and using my thumbs wrote a short story while in line, and used the Canva app to create a cover for it, and uploaded it to Draft Digital from my phone, where I was able to pick a template, much like you would through Vellum, which is a layout software, but this was free. So, you know, with no overhead to me at all, no cost to me out of pocket at all, I went from idea to book in a 3-hour gap. You know, it's not a super long book. It's a short story with a cover, you know. And I paused before submitting it and publishing it because I wanted to make sure I edited the thing. But that book right now is available as a free download on my website at kevintomlinson.com. It's called The Janai Sigil. And it is a short story and set in my Dan Kotler archaeological thriller universe. And I created that with no overhead whatsoever, using nothing but my iPhone, while standing in line at Disney World. So, all this to say, whatever you think the barriers are to you creating, to you promoting, to you marketing, to you reaching an audience, they don't exist anywhere else but in your mind. You can make the time. I do a daily journal, and I wrote, I do three pieces of wisdom. I write three pieces of wisdom, and I let the universe, inspire me to this. I just sort of free flow something, three little bullet points basically each day, and then I write the rest of my journal. One of the ones that I wrote this morning was about this idea that, the only real barrier, you can find the time to achieve, the only way to find the time to achieve the things you want to achieve. You have more than enough time if you are willing to sacrifice and set aside that time. And the sacrifice in this instance means there are plenty of other things you need to do, want to do, feel obligated to do, and you, to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish, you would need to set aside time for that. I think that is reasonable, and I think everyone can do it, and I know I'll get arguments from some, but if you really look deep in your heart, I know you're going to figure it out for yourself that the things that are important to you get done, and the things that aren't, don't, and you can set aside the time, and it means a little bit of sacrifice, maybe sacrificing some sleep, maybe sacrificing a meal, maybe sacrificing, maybe an hour of TV or an hour with your kids, and all these things can be very important to you, so you just need to figure out the gap in there where this other important thing can be done. So anyway, that's not really what we're talking about in this interview today, but I just spoke to our guest yesterday. Now, I have other interviews in the can, but I felt like this was timely and needed to be out there. So I'm going to go ahead and run with it now. I hope you enjoy it. I'm chatting with author, podcast host, a friend, a good friend now, J. Daniel Sawyer. So enjoy this interview, and I'll see you on the other side. Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, for sticking through the intro. I'm not even sure what I said in the intro, but I promise, I can guarantee at least I was interested in it. So thanks for tuning in and playing along. So today we're talking to J. Daniel Sawyer. Now I'm going to read his bio here because it's got some great details for you, but longtime podcaster, full cast audio pioneer, an independent filmmaker, and author of 30 books. J. Sawyer hosts the Daily Writers Podcast, the everyday novelist dedicated to creativity, process, and writerly discipline, and cultivating a fertile mental life. That's the part I wanted to get to in your bio. Cool. I like the idea of a fertile mental life. How's that shake out? And welcome to the show.
Hi. Good to talk to you again, Kevin. Yeah, you were on Everyday Novelist, what, about 2 years ago, I think
it was, right? A little over 2 years ago? It doesn't seem like that long.
It's been crazy packed 2 years in, like, every sense.
Yeah. I feel like I've done a billion podcasts and webinars and live streams since then. And that's just this week.
Oh, boy.
Yes, and I told you this before we started, and I'm going to apologize to the rest of the world because if I sound at all frazzled or off my game, it's because we've had on top of a pandemic, and I don't know when you're listening to this. It's probably a little bit in the future for sure. Maybe things turned out all right, and if so, thank you, world, for playing along. But things have been a little crazy. In terms of stuff we're doing with D2D, we got these spotlights we're doing like every day. And then my buddy here pops in, and for some reason, I thought it was one of my author consults. So I'm off base. I'm off kilter, man. We're going to get back on track. So
I think we'll do fine.
How is everything in the J. Daniel Sawyer world, man? Tell me a little bit about what you're doing right now.
Well, right now I'm stuck up in the backwoods. I moved up to the backwoods of New England for a week in order to help my parents relocate a year ago. It turned out that their retirement house needed some renovations. So
oh, wow.
I got stuck here. And just as we were getting ready to leave, the quarantine comes down. So I might be stuck here another year. So there's a lot of interesting refactoring going on, but
that seems to be the way that works out. I mean, we moved out of our apartment and moved into our in-laws' place for a few days, quote unquote, and then quarantine hit, and we're like, well, we're going to hunker down anywhere. Go ahead.
Yep. But yeah, no, it's good. It's, you know, we've got 50 acres to play with. So there's lots of good time for outsideness, and I'm using the opportunity to resurrect my fiction podcast and get some work ahead done on the homestead we're building on the other side of the country.
Right.
So it's going to work out.
What kind of work ahead can you do if it's on the other side of the country?
There's a lot of design stuff. Designing and costing, sourcing stuff for the first buildings, figuring out order of operations for at what stage we do the well, when we do the catchment, what's the priority of how much electrical build out, because where we are, it's a quarter mile beyond the last electrical pole, so it's 20,000 just to bring power in. So right. It's actually a lot cheaper, even though we're in an iffy climate zone, it's actually a lot cheaper to go solar. So
right.
Yeah. That's a whole new set of things I've been learning about. And
oh, man.
Yeah.
You're talking to the right guy.
Cool.
This is, I have to, so, you know that we're getting into an RV full time again.
Yeah.
So the two biggest problems, the three big problems, one, the two are bigger than the third, but internet is the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, power isn't such a big challenge unless it's going to be hot. Right. And then we have an air conditioner. Right.
Yep.
So, yeah. So solar power and generators and alternative energy are all on my mind. Yeah. I'm thinking about installing something on the wheels of the camper that as we roll, it generates power. Hey.
I've been studying doing that kind of stuff. It should be pretty pretty simple.
Yeah. By simple, that's a relative term.
Well, it's a relative term. But the question is, would it be more efficient than just putting a bigger alternator in the truck and then routing it to the charge bag?
That's something else I've considered. Well, you know, whatever. This has been alternate energy talk, everyone.
There we go.
So,
well, you know, we were talking about a fertile mental life.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things about creativity is it's nonlinear. You can't reason your way into it. What you have to do is you have to create a broad base of knowledge and experience and interests to pull from.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the ways that I keep myself spry is by picking interesting stuff that's not related to anything else I'm doing and finding a way to get interested in it, because I always get story ideas out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And so that's what you mean by fertile mental life.
Well, partly. I've just finished a book called The Autodidact's Bible, which should be coming out. I think we've set the publication date for early July.
Yeah.
Which is basically a comprehensive toolkit for teaching yourself how to self-educate, whether you're self-educating with philosophy or with carpentry and everything in between.
Man, I got to tell you, though, you should call it A Fertile Mental Life, The Autodidactic's Bible.
Thank you. I've been looking for a good title for it because the working title is a bit wonky.
Yeah.
So I'll write that down.
Do that. I think that's going to work. I would buy that book.
All right.
I wouldn't buy the first one.
Right, because it sounds really technical.
It sounds like it's going to, I'm going to have to read this with like one of those clear rulers. Uh-oh. I lost my
Your lighting there. Just went away.
Yeah. Well, good thing everyone listening to this doesn't know that.
Speaking of off-grid power.
No joke. Now, I'm not really sure why that happened, so I'm gonna let that charge up while I'm on with you.
Well, that's okay. Now we're both backlit, so it's sort of fair.
Exactly. Things like this are always happening to me lately. I don't know what's going on. We'll get off that. See, this is what I'm talking about. I get off track just a little.
And just I'm no help because I'll just chase whatever rabbit trail we stumble onto.
You know, I studied improv, and you know, you roll with whatever's gonna come at you.
Yes, so that's, and yes, and
yeah.
Yes, and or no, but never.
Yes.
No,
yeah. So, let's talk a little bit about your. Well, we can talk about your book. Do you want to talk a little about your book? I was gonna get off on your podcasts for.
Yeah,
a bit,
no. Let's get off on the podcast. They're related.
They're related. Sort
of
okay.
Grew partly out of the other.
So. Tell me, how did the show get started? Like, what made you decide to do it?
Back in, gosh, I think it was 2006. Yeah, 2005 or 2006. I went to a write-in for NaNoWriMo at Central Perk in Berkeley, and Chris, whatever his name is, the guy that started NaNoWriMo, was there. And so I got to talking to him, like, why did he do this? I'd never done it before. It always seemed kind of silly to me. And he said, well, I wanted to be a writer and I couldn't motivate myself. So I decided to pick the most difficult month in the year and intentionally write a book there to prove to myself I could do it.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a cool idea. So I wound up trying to do NaNoWriMo that year and I completely failed. But the minor features of the conversation, like going in the direction of greatest difficulty in order to build up your writing chops, really sunk in, made a big difference to me as a writer, to my productivity, and to my general approach to all things writerly. So I had in mind always, especially once I started podcasting, I always thought it would be fun to do sort of a walkthrough of NaNoWriMo for the newbie who'd never written a book before.
Okay.
And about 2016, I had the free time, so I sat and did it. And I got to the end of this 30-day walkthrough, which has since evolved into my book, Becoming an Everyday Novelist. And I started getting emails from people saying, please don't end it here. We've become dependent on it. And so I went on pod and I read a couple of these and I said, okay, so look, here's the problem. It took me God knows how many untold hours to work out the program for this 30-day walkthrough, to put things in the right place, to write the copy, that whole bit. So if you want me to keep this going, you've got to make it easy for me. Send me questions or something.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be the end of it. But they sent questions. Yeah. And they kept sending questions. And they kept sending questions. And it's now 4+ years on. And we're just creeping up on 1,000 episodes now. And they're still sending questions. And occasionally, a question will spin off and I'll do a special series or I'll have a guest on every once in a while. About 2.5 years ago, I wrote I cracked the formula for Heinlein's juvenile books. And so I wrote a Heinlein juvenile and did a walkthrough of how to write a Heinlein juvenile.
Interesting.
And, so there's other stuff like that. But as the years have gone on, the questions have gotten more and more interesting. We get into history and psychology and philosophy and general autodidacticism and mental health management, physical health management. And the reading list that I refer people to keeps growing and growing and growing.
Yeah. What puts you, though, on that specific course? Like, I guess the more important question is, like, how are you answering those questions? Like, where are the answers come from?
I read the questions when they come in, and then about once I get enough to do a block, I record 15 to 30 episodes in a day.
Yeah.
And do it all off the top of my head.
Okay.
I literally grew up in academia. Both grandfathers are cattle ranchers, and then my father is a theology professor. So I grew up idolizing my blue-collar grandparents and hanging out in the college where my father taught. So I was, like, auditing classes when I was 6-7 years old just because I thought it was cool, not realizing I was picking up useful stuff.
Right.
And I've just always loved learning and hated school. So I've become, I dropped out of school at 15. I started working full-time and going to college on the sly. And just read, experiment, learn, do a bunch of different stuff. I've run a courier company. I've run a couple of publishing companies. I've been in the tech world. I've run a music company, it was a music services company, like live sound mixing and doing concert videos and that sort of thing. And over the years, I've built up this toolkit for how to navigate any situation and come out of it learning a lot about it and how to cross apply those things to other areas so that you can bootstrap on multiple fronts at once.
Yeah.
So when someone comes in and asks a question, and I'm always really careful to separate my opinion from the state of the art in a given field and what the state of my knowledge is. And then if it's something that's, socially controversial or that's fraught in the field, I refer to sources that counterbalance each other.
Yeah.
And when it's something more historical, I just refer to a couple of good books that give more depth on the subject than I'm able to give. We've done deep dives on the history and background of the writing of certain influential books, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you're cataloging all this somewhere so that people can access.
Yeah, there's a on the website at everydaynovelist.com, there's a reading list of basically every book we've ever recommended on the cast.
And now, monetizing that somehow? Are you people got paid access?
Yeah, it's No. Well, it's free to listen. I've got a Patreon, a Subscribestar, and a Gumroad subscription feed. All currently doesn't bring in very much, but it's, for me, it's kind of a pay it forward thing. I need to figure out how to monetize it a little better because it does take an ungodly amount of time.
That's always the challenge too, because you know, you like me. I mean, I've lost track of how much I've put out there that's meant to help the community, but you know, at some point, you do have to make a living. Luckily, my books make my living, so that's great. But you put in all this time and energy, you feel like there should be some sort of monetary reward.
Well, people who listen to this, if you come over and listen to the cast, kick a dollar in here and there, or buy the books through the links on the site, that really helps out a lot. One of the lovely things, and you'll know this, one of the lovely things about being sort of off the beaten track, whether you're in an RV or going, or we were in an RV for a couple of years, or going off to the middle of the woods, is you have the freedom to live on quite a lot less than everybody else does.
Right.
So it doesn't take a whole lot to meet your monthly bills. So even though we don't make a lot, it really does help with the budget. But genuinely, every dollar helps, which is both nice and a little bit of a downer.
Yeah. Well, but I guess if you really think about it, that's just going to be true no matter what. I mean, you know,
I suppose so.
Yeah. I mean, for most people, for like, we'll say 90% of people, that's probably going to be the truth.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. It's going to be interesting watching what kind of long-term effects this whole pandemic adventure has on people's determination to work from home and other things over the long term. That could seriously change the shape of the way things work.
I predict that. I honestly think we just witnessed like a leap forward in the evolution of civilization. As you know, everything we understood has come to an end, and we're now going to reinvent ourselves.
That's a lot more true than you might realize, because it's not just the social changes that this is forcing, but there's another set of social changes that was waiting in the wings for coming 2-3 years from now when the boomers hit mass retirement that this has accelerated.
Yeah.
And that is that because of the global demography, the demand-driven economic expansion that started with the Black Death just ended.
Right.
Just ended.
Right.
That's 500 years of political, social, and economic and ethical systems all premised on the notion that things would continue to grow at a moderate rate forever. They don't work anymore.
Right.
I'm planning on editing an anthology later this year dealing with potential new ways to do things where growth is not an embedded obligation of the system. Figure science fiction needs to get back to hardcore speculation. So
I think we also just witnessed the opening of a whole new door when it comes to intellectual property and the way culture reacts with it.
That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. I'm real curious to see what happens. Because, you know, think about everything we've seen of late, like all the little sessions where people do like, you know,
Sorry about that.
No problem. You got to clean anything up? You good?
No, I just wasn't, my reflector wasn't backed by a strong enough weight.
All right. You know, all those videos and everything that have popped up with like nurses and doctors singing, or high school kids singing something and performing something, you know, all that stuff is out there and it's getting a lot of attention, and some of it is even sort of inadvertently monetized, but nobody is having to secure the rights to any of that stuff right now. So
there's going to have to be a new compulsory licensing scheme like happened in the 20s when radio came in.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Well, you know, that there's this whole thing going on with, this has been in discussion for years really, because this is why the Creative Commons first kind of came on the scene. But, you know, can you really and truly own an idea, and is it beneficial to society for you to own the idea? And we need to make a living as content creators, but do we, you know, how far does that extend in terms of ownership? So, you know, I kind of am on in that boat of, you know, ideas want to be free. Like the guy who created, was it Oracle? No, it was, Linux, the creator of Linux.
Yes.
But at the same time, I make my living from my ideas. So,
It was Bill, what's his name, from Sun Microsystems said that.
Okay. Sorry, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. No problem.
But I'm the same way. I've quite a lot of my stuff is Creative Commons licensed, mm-hmm. and I I've interviewed Cory Doctorow years ago, and the greatest enemy of any new artist is obscurity, not piracy, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Totally on board with that. And on the other hand, the rationale for copyright law is that for the civilization to benefit from the culture, people have to be incentivized to make it. And when everything was expensive to publish, that was very easy to, that was a very easy line to draw, but it's not anymore. And we've delayed rethinking that seriously by 30 years. And I think you're right. That dam just broke.
Yeah, I absolutely think it has. And, of course, one of the things that's been happening since the pandemic started, I almost hesitate to talk about the pandemic at all, honestly, because by the time this episode airs, we should hopefully be out of
quarantine. Don't bet on it. I'm expecting that there'll be a sawtooth quarantine for.
We'll see. Years. We'll see if you're right. If this when this goes live, we'll see if things change. I don't know. Whatever.
I'm now on record, so if my prediction is awful, then everyone can laugh at me.
There's gonna be a transcript and everything, man.
Absolutely.
So I think right now I know from my experience with Draft to Digital and in my own personal experience that ebook sales have been just going through the roof, mm-hmm. And I mean we've seen like a 45% increase across retailers, but like 175% increase with libraries. So people are out there.
My audiobook library sales have also gone way up.
Yeah.
That's why I seem to have the greatest penetration in libraries with my audiobooks.
And now that's interesting though. That's interesting because most of the time when I think about audiobooks, I'm thinking like people are getting them to listen to while they drive into work or something.
I would think so too, but maybe, while they're
could be.
Out,
everybody's taking walks or, yeah.
or cleaning the house. I mean, if you're living in the house, you have to clean a lot more often.
So how are you balancing the podcasting and everything else you're doing with the writing? Like, how are you keeping on track?
I tend to batch a lot. So like right now, it's called The Everyday Novelist because I usually write every day, but the last few months, because things have been so weird, it's been a little bit different. So I've currently got 4 books that I'm redlining, and the podcast is actually, as much time as it takes, it's actually easy because I can batch it. So I'd say, okay, at the end of the recorded buffer is coming up, like when we're recording this, I've got another recording session tonight because my buffer just ran out. I say the end of the recorded buffer is coming up, take one night to record them all, then take a day to edit them all and post them, and then that's that. But I do a lot of stuff with batch work, so I let enough of a pile up that I can do it as a project, because with the exception of getting in a groove and writing every day, almost everything else I either get bored of or it starts to grind on me if it's a chronic thing. But if I have projects I can get through, mm-hmm. then that jazzes me up. So
how much production goes into each of your podcast episodes?
For The Everyday Novelist, it's about a 2.5 to 1 time-wise. As you can tell, as we're talking here, I have a bit of a scatter shot. I tend to circle a topic before angling in on it. And sometimes there's a lot of stumbling associated with that.
So right.
I like, when I'm doing The Everyday Novelist, because it's all improv, I like to narrow the stumbling down as much as possible. So it takes about twice as long to cut every episode as the final listening length winds up being.
Okay.
So overall, I'm at, including the recording time, at about 2 or 3 to 1 production ratio.
All right. Well, all right. That makes sense. That's about what it takes for me. So I feel a little more comfortable. I am actually, because I've been doing some other stuff recently live, mm-hmm. I'm actually considering shifting the model of this show to being a live format and essentially producing it on the fly. Yeah, it can be fun. It's a little tougher to get certain guests on, but you get the benefit of, you know, the production is done that day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Dead simple. So. Yeah, no, I dig doing interview shows that way. When I'm doing monologues, I like to massage the timing a lot because that really helps with the delivery.
Yeah.
But when you've got a conversation going on, the timing emerges from the interaction. So you can avoid the editing if you want to.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. I like that part where everything is done for me automatically.
Oh yeah.
I started this thing called the Kevin Show. I don't know if you've seen any of those, and they're ridiculous.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
And they're not writing.
Oh, is that your YouTube channel?
Yeah. Yeah. So I started.
Okay, I've got a tab open, but I haven't watched any of them yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to warn you in advance. Don't go there hoping for writing wisdom.
But, well, I figured it's you, so it's probably going to be like RV, weird DIY stuff, and strange.
There's going to be all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So it started literally that show. See, okay, I'm going to bring us back around to what we're discussing here, but that show started as me and Nick Thacker. I said to Nick, you know what? I was so stressed out from the moving, from the pandemic, from, you know, just being inundated with things. And I said, you know what I would love to do is just do something stupid, fun, no agenda, no plan, and call it the Kevin Show, because that's ridiculous, and just put it out there live and have fun for 30 minutes. Nice. Distract people. And he said I'd go on that. And so within an hour I had designed that entire show, from the graphics to music to a video intro to booking my first guest, and the next day it went live, and I've done one every week since. So that said, to bring it back to the important thing of this interview, which is you, that shows, I think, that process of the fertile mind, you know, the fertile mental life that you are focused on. Or would you disagree with that? Kind of put you on the spot there.
I think that's a great example, that the branching out, I'm trying to think of something pithy to come back to that, but yeah, I think you got it exactly.
That's something
life pithy. Is chaotic, interesting, and complicated, and it doesn't easily fit into any of the categories that anybody likes to impose on it.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who I ran into it from. It might have been something out of one of Taleb's books, but I came across this idea of it's better to have strong opinions loosely held.
Yeah.
Than weak opinions strongly held. Most people have weak opinions strongly held. They have ideas that they like. They can't really support them in the face of a monumental challenge, but they'll hold on to them for dear life because they're identified with them.
Exactly.
In a sort of.
Yeah. I like that.
Core way. I prefer to be able to articulate what I'm thinking in a very strong way.
Right.
And be comfortable enough with my own level of ignorance that I can change my opinion when something challenges it, and it doesn't, and my opinion doesn't stand up in the teeth of whatever I'm engaging with. As a result, of course, I've had multiple interesting worldview shifts over my life. I've been all over the political spectrum. I've had 3 different religions, and but the reason is that I'm more interested in figuring out what's actually going on and engaging with life in a deep way. And if that's my priority, then what's expendable has to be my determination to cling on to the things that might otherwise make me feel secure.
Yeah. Okay. That is... I love the way you put that. If that is an actual quote, I need to go find it about strong opinions loosely held.
Strong opinions loosely held, yeah.
Yeah, that's I feel like that's me. And I think the danger is people hear strong opinions and then decide that's where you stand. And so the idea that you might change your mind from a strong opinion and pivot to a new worldview is completely foreign to some folks. But I think that's the right way to be personally. I like that.
Yeah. And I do. And I mean, one of the things you're like me, you're a little bit north of 30 at least. And one of the things, by the time you hit your mid 30s, you realize that whether you want it to or not, your worldview is going to change.
Yeah.
Because the cumulative experience you build up gradually goes out of sync with your ideology, whatever ideology that is, because right. ideologies are models that we build to deal with the world. They're not the world itself. And any model is going to have holes in it.
Yeah.
And so when you're in your 20s, it's really easy to righteously hold on to everything because you're fighting for the good. Yeah. But the older you get, the more that instead of making you impassioned and a person of great conviction, makes you look kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Because you're not.
You look vapid and hollow.
Well, yeah, because what's happening is while your practical worldview is changing, and you can always tell by the evidence of someone's behavior rather than what they say, what you believe is reflected in what you do, not in what you say. And as you get older, if you're holding on to those early convictions that tightly, the gap between your behavior and your speech will grow.
Yeah.
And if you look in the mirror, and all of us eventually do, or at least most of us eventually do, you notice that disconnect, and that's when you have the existential crisis. Like, who am I?
Yeah. If you've ever read Carol Dweck's book about called Mindset, it talks about that exactly. You should that will probably end up on your list of recommended books, because it talks about that very idea, and it's the closed mindset versus the open mindset, you know. And we tend to look for things that become part of our identity, especially when we're young, especially when we're vulnerable. Like we're, you know, the bullied high school kid, you know, can say, well, people pick on me, but at least I'm really good at math. And so if you identify with that and then you fail a math test, you're crushed. Your whole identity was just taken for you. You were murdered, you know, in your own mind. And so you start to think, if I don't have that, what am I? Who am I? So anyway, so unfortunately, we're closing in on our time.
Closing on the end.
Which is really unfortunate, man. I dig talking to you. Now, when am I coming back on your show, man? I'm going to put you on the spot live. Tuesday, no.
Seriously. Whenever is good for you, let me know. I would love to have you back on, especially now you're working with Draft to Digital. I'd like to get some of the info.
Because I don't think I was last time. Was I?
Last time you were...
completely independent.
You were just leaving your first stint at Draft to Digital, I think it was.
No, it would have been because I was still. Oh yeah, so I was working for DDD, but stayed with them.
Different position.
I was getting on the road though. That's the only. That would have been it. So okay, so I was still fresh at DDD, really, because that happened like right after. Okay, there we go.
Yep.
That's
the stuff you guys are doing over there, especially now that Mark's on the team and whatnot, has gotten a lot more interesting. I keep signing up for the meetings and then not making them because of everything else in the world.
They're recorded.
I really want. I'm gonna have to look back through for my recorded.
Our YouTube channel.
Okay.
Which is officially youtube.com/c/drafttodigital, everyone. And while you're there, look for Kevin Tomlinson, and you can tune into the Kevin Show. So end of plugs, but tell everybody the more important URL is, where can people find you online?
You can find me at everydaynovelist.com. That's for the daily podcast. You can find a whole bunch of my other stuff, audiobooks, full-cast audio fiction podcasts, my rather scattered and sometimes very dark musings on the universe on my blog, and a complete list of the books that are available for purchase at the moment, as well as my autodidacts reading list at www.jdsawyer.net. And excellent. If you want a very, very dark take on some of the stuff we were talking about earlier about the changeover in ages, check out my blog post, The Abyss Stares Back.
Yes. Excellent. All right. Well, you heard him, everybody. Make sure you check that stuff out. Buy his books. Go see his stuff. Listen to his podcast. There's a lot you can do to keep him going. Throw a buck or two his way on Patreon. let's make sure we're taking care of our own here, man. So J. Daniel Sawyer, sir, thank you so much for being a part of the Wordslinger podcast.
Thanks for having me on. It is a delight.
Everybody else, right now, you are probably hearing the Groovy Bridge music. You may dance in place at will, and if you stick around, I am sure to say something profound on the other side. And if I don't, make fun of me. See you next time.
Among platypi, it is the male that has and carries the young. And it's one of the only mammals we know that lays eggs. Isn't that profound? So, there you go. Promise fulfilled. And I hope you enjoyed that interview with J. Daniel Sawyer. I know I did. I need to get back on his show. I told him I would get back on his show. Put him on the spot. This is how you do it, folks. You ask. And when you ask, you use leverage. And the same thing applies, by the way, to marketing your books. It's interesting. So we are staying with my in-laws. My mother-in-law is also an author. She's got a book out there. Her name is Carlene Steibel, and that's spelled K-A-R-L-E-E-N and S-T-A-I-B-L-E, Carlene Steibel. And she's got a book called Pearl. She's also got several others out there, but if you go look her up, I would appreciate it, and you can give her a boost, buy her books, send her a note. She loves hearing from people, and we're kind of working toward building up her author career. So it's very fortuitous for me to be here, but it's also interesting because we have conversations, and I hear her say some of the same things I hear authors say all the time. You know, they want to just write, and the marketing just drives them nuts. But here's my parting advice for you when it comes to marketing, and I also struggle with these things. As a marketer, as a guy who markets for a living with Draft Digital and my own work and what have you, I also struggle with marketing my stuff because that's not the fun part, right? But I can tell you, forget about the complicated stuff. Forget about everything. Find something to do once a week at least, right? Now, what I'm trying to do is I'm aiming for each week I do three things to market the books. And I am leaning in pretty hard on promotions, you know, paid or otherwise, outside of advertising. I feel like advertising, you know, there are a lot of complications to advertising that make it less fun, and there are things about it I do enjoy. Some of the guys I am friends with just love it, and they will track every click, they will track every, they know their ROI down to like the penny, and that stuff, it can be fun, I admit, but it's also very time consuming. And if you're just kind of starting, or you have limited time, or you've got lots of pressures, that sort of thing can just intimidate the crap out of you. So my recommendation is, pick three things you can do in a week that do actually market your work. And I'm leaning in on promotions through services like Book Sweeps, which is Ryan Z's creation. Book Funnel, if I can get a feature deal, that's great. But I'm also occasionally running ads. Book Bub for the feature deal and ads, but Book Funnel from my good friend Damon Courtney, lives like 30 miles from me at this point. Book Funnel has promotions you can be a part of, and they don't cost anything. So that's a good tool. I also use Bargain Booksy and Free Booksy, which do have a cost, but it's fairly low key. These services, Book Sweeps and Bargain Booksy, are fairly low cost. BookBub has, you know, a lot higher cost, but you can make things very reasonable depending on what you choose, the options you choose. So if you can get a feature deal, though, those will skyrocket you. I from my own experience. So, so I do one of these. I do three things in these categories each week. And there are other services out there. I also lean very heavy on building my mailing list over sales. And that may seem counterintuitive, but my goal here is I want to hit 100,000 legitimate subscribers on my mailing list, because I know when I release a book, that group alone, if I'm getting like 30 to 35% engagement with that list right now, if I can maintain that to, and that's at like around 40,000 subscribers, if I can maintain that up to 100,000 subscribers, that there's a lot of money at stake there. So that's just my parting advice for the day. Don't let marketing intimidate you. Turn it into something fun. Do three things a week, and as you go, you learn. You know, commit yourself to learning a little more and trying new things. And you know, the stuff that works, keep doing, and the stuff that doesn't, let it go. And if something's not quite working for you, don't feel guilty because you're not doing what everyone else is doing. That's always been my my trouble as well. So that is it. You're hearing the groovy outro music now, and I hope you are staying healthy and safe out there. God bless you. And I'll see you all next time.
Wordslinger.